This is a podcast from Minute Media.
DeWindy City Chicago Bears podcast. Welcome in. On the show today is Herb Howard. He's a Bears beat reporter. He's awesome. I'm telling you, you're going to really love this conversation. Herb has got it going on. He's the co-host of the I Said What I Said podcast. He's also a radio personality at WVON in Chicago on the old iHeart Radio, and on Twitter, it's at HerbHoward411. Two things before we get the show going. Number one, the tragedy that just happened in Texas is not surprising, which is the worst part of this. And I'm just following the conversation on social media, and it's just, for lack of a, there's just no other way to look at it. It's just straight, flat, depressing. No one has any confidence that anything is going to change, and we all know that things need to change. But I honestly think that what needs to be done is more videos of parents, and it's a terrible thing to say, but does there need to be pictures of the children? Not just actual 10-year-old school pictures, but what it looks like after one of these things happened for people to actually see it. The amount of pressure that needs to be put on our public officials has to be beyond extreme. Beyond extreme. So just straight awful, as we all know. So Herb and I had a good episode, and it came before they allowed the media to go to OTAs for a day. So we got there, and we saw Tevin Jenkins was presented to the media. Tevin is impressive right now. He's lost 20 pounds, down from 345 to 325. His body fat is down from 33 to 24. He's doing Pilates, which is not easy to do. I actually asked him about it. I'm like, is that torture for you, doing Pilates, or do you actually somehow enjoy it? And then he looks at me, he's like, you ever done Pilates? And I kind of lied to Tevin Jenkins. I have not done Pilates. I've done yoga. To me, it's kind of the same thing. I despise yoga, but feel great after I do it, right? I think anybody who's done yoga can relate to that. I don't know how anybody enjoys any of those things. Do you like stretching? No, I don't. It's painful. It's miserable. But I do it because I want to play the sports that I love to play, or I just want my body to feel good and be able to walk around, period. But good on Tevin, man. He's also cutting out carbs from his diet. I don't know fully, but he said he's beer's gone, mac and cheese, rice. So getting healthy, commitment on and off the field. Good for you, Tevin Jenkins, moving over to right tackle. And I just, it's interesting. Justin Fields speaking. We're going to talk a ton about that on this episode, so I won't overspeak that right now. But Fields to Bleacher Report, and he's all up on how his experience last year was not great and things are better now. So on that note, let's actually get into it. DeWindy City Chicago Bears podcast starts right now.
Showtime.
I think borderline best friends of anyone in the media with Matt Eberflus. Herb, you had a moment there with Flus. I'm going to set this up. I'm not doing a great job setting this up, but we're going to play a little sound clip of you and Flus last week. But you asked him about the schedule. He said he didn't care about the schedule. And then there was some banter with the media. And then afterwards, the Flus came up to you and said hello. And you had a moment with the Flus. I was super jealous. So congrats.
No, it was pretty cool. I mean, I had a question for him about the schedule, and he kind of snapped. And it was like, I don't care about the schedule. And I was like, I mean, I get it in terms of coach speaking. You play who's on your schedule. I get that part. But you don't care when the bye is. You don't care if you get one where the team's coming to Soldier Field late December, January. That doesn't matter at all. And so, you know, shout out to Jason Leisure, too. He followed up with a good question that got a little bit better answer out of him. But then, you know, Coach Eberflus did come up to me right after the press conference and shake my hand and say, I didn't mean anything about it. I was like, no, that's cool. I didn't take it personally. I was just surprised. But
yeah, so here, let's hear the interaction. And then, by the way, I'll give you the whole lowdown of how you can become a major fan of the DeWindy City podcast. But since we're talking about this, here it is. Herb to Flus. Last week at OTAs, by the way, we'll get to be out there tomorrow for another a stirring rendition of OTAs. But here's Herb asking Coach Flus about the schedule.
What were your initial thoughts on the schedule when you saw these home games, road games, when the bye is, those types of things?
Doesn't matter. It does not matter. I could care less.
It doesn't matter that your bye's in December. That's the latest.
Nope.
You can possibly
it doesn't matter. It is what it is, and we got to play the schedule. So, but you look at it as a football coach. What you do is you look at it and you say, okay, you know, there's certain breaks in the schedule when you have a bye week that late. Well, when can you get the guys a break? You know, and the scheduling of it's very important because you want to get your guys fresh into the game. So you're certainly looking at that. We're putting that together as we speak. You know, the training camp schedule and what we're going to operate during the season. So, but in terms of your question, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You got to play the schedule. You see what I'm saying? But you do look at it. It's an important thing.
Oh, you do look at it.
It is an important thing.
Yeah, but hey, I'm going to be tough guy Flus here. Listen, I am creating a chemistry, a culture. We are not going to get knocked off by things that do not matter. And whenever we play the Packers, whenever we play the Lions, right? Flus is just head down. Let's do this. We're the Chicago Bears, which, hey, I appreciate that, Flus, right?
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that. It makes a lot of sense for a coach. He's trying to come in. He's trying to set his culture. He's got a young nucleus of guys, and he wants them to, you know, kind of do things his way and see things his way. I understand that completely, but I think that sometimes you can just go a little – you can get so bogged down in coach speak that you just don't make common sense. It's like, coach, I get what you're saying, but the schedule, it does matter. It is kind of important. Is it front-loaded? Is your home schedule front-loaded, back-loaded? Those things matter, and you know, he got a little coach speaky, but then – he came around, okay, it matters a little bit.
Yeah, he literally floats in and out of coach speak. Like, there's some times where I feel like I'm getting the real Flus, and then there's other times where it's just like, okay, please don't turn into Matt Nagy or Mark Trestman or whoever Bears coach you want to name, where it's just painful. I also don't get, it's not that hard to be a human being and communicate with the media. It just, but for whatever reason, it's like a mystery for these guys, right? Hey, we would have preferred the bye week a little bit earlier, Herb, to be honest with you. But you know, our guys are
simple.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been sweet. And, you know, I like that we got the Packers early. I think that's, you know, it's going to be a challenge whenever you play them, but I like playing them in week two, kind of just see where we're at, something like that. No advantages are going to be gained. We're good.
You're not, no harm, no foul, and simply saying, you know, with a young team, it would have been nicer to have a bit of an earlier buy, or, you know, any of the things you mentioned, like, that's it. Nobody's asking you to give away state secrets here, coach, but just, what did you think of your South Carolina? I didn't think nothing. We play who we play.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, the Windy City Bears podcast, we're live on YouTube every Monday at 5, extra episodes throughout most weeks. We'll have one this week with OTAs tomorrow. I'll be out at Hallis Hall. I'm assuming Herb will be there too. The audio podcast comes out on Tuesdays. Follow myself on Twitter at TheCarm. Follow Herb at HerbHoward411. Any Bears questions left on social media on any platform will be responded to. We appreciate you checking out the Windy City Bears podcast. Now, let's go to the news of the weekend, news of the day. Bleacher Report, Scott, is it? I don't know, Scott. Scott Polasek, whoever he is, did a hell of a job talking to Justin Fields. And a lot of interesting stuff in here, Herb. I mean, to me, what stands out is how much the Bears are really making an effort to be on team Fields. Like they've almost tripped over themselves at times. Justin Fields is the hardest worker in here. If I'm another Chicago Bear, I might take a little bit of offense to that. Like, hey, hold on a second here. I'm lifting weights. I'm studying film too.
Right.
Justin Fields cares more than anybody. Well, hold on a second. Like, you telling me that name a Chicago Bear,
Lucas David Patrick, Montgomery doesn't care.
He doesn't care as much. Like, come on, dude. Even guys who don't look like they care at times. Eddie Jackson probably doesn't like that comment. And I'm not saying that Eddie doesn't care. I'm just saying he had a bad year last year. That's all I'm saying, Bears fans. Hopefully it'll be better this year. Right. Yeah, exactly. Facts are facts. But, you know, I thought that, listen, they're out. They're all, I got a bunch of quotes here, but let me just read one for you. They're out golfing together. We're spending a little time together. This is Fields talking. We actually went golfing, just kind of getting to know these guys away from the facility and getting to know them on a personal level was awesome. Nobody can be upset with this, right?
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's nice to heap praise upon your young quarterback. Listen, if the Bears seek to turn this thing around as quickly as possible, he's going to have to be good. Like, if you get to the end of the 24-25 season and you're like, he's not the guy, we got to reset, then everybody, we're going to start this thing all over again. And so if they're going to be good, it's going to be with him at quarterback. And so I think that it's good to kind of, you know, heap that praise on him. I think they started out very, very early with it when they announced Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus as the new general manager and head coach. They had Justin Fields in the building. He was the only player there to kind of represent them and give his thoughts on that. I thought that was very telling just in general, just to have him there on that particular day. But I think since then going forward, they have been intentional about, you know, talking about his work ethic and talking about, you know, how early he gets into the building, how late he stays, those types of things. I think it's kind of par for the course with the quarterback. You're going to get more praise than you deserve and probably more blame than you deserve too. But I think it's good to hear so far. And I think that, you know, if he can continue to be viewed that way, not only by his coaches, but by his teammates, that bodes well for the Bears.
So do you find any of it off, Herb? Like, do we really need to praise, like, polish the massage the quarterback as detailed as the Bears are going? Like, it's almost to me like, are you worried about this guy? We got the kid gloves on here. We really got to praise him to get his mind right. Have you had that thought at all?
Yeah, I have thought about it, but just in my observations of Justin last year, he doesn't seem to be a fragile kid. He doesn't seem to be mentally weak in that way. I think he's able to handle kind of the ebbs and flow of a season, especially a rookie season that had its ups and downs. And so I don't think that he is, you know, that kind of emotionally fragile where they have to kind of coddle him and say, hey, we're going to praise you and heap these praises on you. You got to make sure you're feeling good. He doesn't seem to be that type of athlete. And so, you know, I don't know that it's necessary, but I won't blame him for it at this, you know, honeymoon phase, if you will.
Let me see the one quote, Richard, on the culture that the honeymoon phase that we're trying to get into here, because I think this is interesting. Look, Fields, look, we're kind of just trying to reculture or get the culture in the building. I don't think our culture was the best culture last year. So working with the new staff, everybody is just buying in. We got a lot of new people in. That's just creating a foundation for years to come. That's really the most exciting thing about it. It's been awesome working with the new coaches and working with my new teammates. Okay, so he's calling it out. It sucked last year. Mm-hmm. I did not know that I was going to be the starting quarterback, so I had to be the rookie, so to speak, and not overstep my bounds. And then, moronically, I'll say it just like that, Andy Dalton gets hurt after week two. This guy's not ready to play. You didn't get him ready to play, and now we're going to throw him out there against the Cleveland Browns, who eat quarterbacks alive with no game plan, and he's going to have net 1 yards passing because right. You just didn't you put him in a horrible position, and there it right. is. You know, there's the culture, or the result of the culture and everything that was going on last year.
Yeah, and we've heard some of those things too, going back to Nick Foles and his time, you know, starting in 2020. And he, you know, kind of talked about, you know, some of the issues that was going on with that offense. And, you know, he kind of tiptoed around some of the things, just reading between the lines. You can tell that he was, you know, very critical of some of the culture that the Bears had going on. With that being said, I don't think it was necessary for Justin to say that. I think anybody who observed the team or anybody who simply realized that the entire regime got fired can understand that the culture probably wasn't what it needed to be. And so I don't think that he needed to say that per se. I think that he just needs to prepare himself to have the best season possible. Matt Nagy and the culture and all those things can be true. But at the end of the day, he's going to be judged on how well he plays football this year and every year going forward. And so he can kind of just let that go. He didn't have to go back and take any, you know, parting shots at them. I don't know if he was doing it intentionally or maliciously, but it just wasn't necessary. He didn't have to say that. We all knew that.
Yeah, I suppose. I didn't hate him saying it, like, but it is a little bit like, if you're going down that route, it's okay. So now you're telling everybody that Nagy and company sucked and the culture sucked. And before that, like, here he is, like, and this is today's modern athlete. I have no problem with it, but like some old school folks, but like, you don't need to go on Instagram to show me that you're working out in Atlanta. You're doing what you should be doing. You're right. You know, that's what guys do. So there's some of like, hey, don't put this on me because that's not fair. But he can kind of, I don't know, like I just, you know it. Just know, you don't have to tell anyone. Like, just know what happened and know what you're going to do, right?
Yeah, and just go ball and ball next year. Everybody will know that it wasn't on you. But anybody who followed the team understood that he was not put in the best position to succeed. If you come out all spring long, you're talking about, you know, Andy's going to be our starter. Andy's going to be number one. Justin will be number two. And that's how it's going to be. Then fine, right? I'm not saying that's the right decision or the wrong decision. But if that's the decision that you made, stick to it, right? And don't let, you know, outside influences or fan pressure or media pressure or a bump and a bruise here change your plan completely. Because we were out there at training camp. He wasn't getting any reps with the one reps with the starting offensive line, with the starting receivers. He was mostly working with the twos and threes. And so then you go in a couple weeks into the season and say, okay, throw him in the fire. It's like that wasn't necessarily fair to him. So no, he wasn't put in the best position to succeed. I don't think he needed to say it. Just show up and ball and we'll all know what happened.
Right. You got fans coming in the chat here. Candace is a big fan of yours, Herb. Apparently, I mean, not just like second best, not tops, the best in the business. Hashtag it's us. So that's some big time respect coming your way. Yeah. Thank you, Candace. Appreciate you checking out the Windy and I appreciate your love for Herb. And not everybody gets an invite to this podcast. Damn it. I want big time. Is that a little whiskey you got in there? What do you got flowing there? Oh, I love what you're doing.
It's water, Carm.
Okay. Okay. I thought I saw a good afternoon happening. Stay hydrated right here. I'll do the same. All right. Let me actually do a quote that's kind of interesting on the field. This one coming from Troy Aikman. Now over at ESPN doing Monday Night Football. And Aikman, of course, you know, started out, the Cowboys went through coordinator after coordinator before they found their way. And so that's what's going on in Chicago. Again, Fields with a whole different coaching staff in year two. And so here comes Troy. Can you be successful? There will be discussions, as I'm sure there already have been in Chicago, about Fields having to learn a new offense, a new scheme, those kind of things. But it's only problematic if they bring in someone who's not good. They bring in an offensive guy who's good, who can coordinate that offense and get the best out of the players they have, then it's a good move. So Aikman basically saying, hey, Luke Getsy, if you're good at your job, then this can work. If you're not good at your job, then we're further causing problems for the quarterback. I think that shows, you know, a decent amount of confidence in and maybe a little reassuring to Bears fans that this could be okay, Herb. Like, hey, look, yeah, okay, it's another system, but like if they hired the right guy, this could be great for the Bears and great for Fields.
Yeah, I think that you look at Justin Fields, you can see that he has all the tools. Physically, he has the tools. He has the arm. He has the mobility. He can make plays with his legs. We've seen him make some really spectacular throws, put the ball up over the linebackers, down in front of the safeties. We've seen him make those types of throws. Now we're just looking for that consistency. And can somebody put him in position to succeed on a regular basis? And I think that is about the offensive coordinator. Fortunately, so far, and what I've heard from Coach Getsy is that he is going to come in and make his offense tailored to fit his players. And I think that sometimes you get these coaches who are so stubborn and they believe in their system so heavily that they want the players to fit into the system. And that's not the way you want to do it. You want to kind of tailor your system to the players that you have. And it's fine. I think that was one of the downfalls of Matt Nagy. I think he tried so hard for so long to duplicate that Chiefs offense. And it's a great offense. I'm not mad at the offense, but you don't have Patrick Mahomes and you don't have Cheetah and you don't have Travis Kelce. And so you can't do it that way. That doesn't mean you can't win football games. You just have to do it in a different way. And so hopefully Luke Getsy will not try and create an exact replica of an Aaron Rodgers-led offense, but do something that will allow Justin Fields to be successful.
He said the same stuff, basically. Like, hey, we don't have Odell. We don't have Cooper Kupp on our team. But at the end of the day, I think if everybody's, quote, on their P's and Q's and we're on top of everything, not making mistakes, the players we have right now are good enough. This was Fields talking to Bleacher Report once again. And I thought the most interesting thing in that quote, the front office thinks that, too. The fans, Carm, Herb, outside of the professionals, outside of the facility, they don't know what's going on at practice. Just because we don't have a big-name guy doesn't mean those guys aren't talented. I have plenty of confidence in myself and my teammates that we're going to get the job done. So backing his guys, backing himself. Good. Let's go.
Yeah, he's got to do that. He's got to back his guys. He's got to make them feel like he believes in them. And he's got to also talk about the confidence that he has in himself, because truth be told, he is going to have to compensate for the fact that they don't have a whole lot of weapons around him. Now, could some of those guys develop in surprises? Sure. And could they play well enough for the Bears to be competitive and successful? Sure they can. But they still are not elite level number one receivers. None of them. That's no shot to Darnell Mooney or Pringle or any of those guys. But they don't have elite level weaponry on the outside. And so he's going to have to kind of compensate for that. But they can certainly find ways to still be successful.
Well, and Trevor Siemian was asked about the scheme that they're going to be playing and how it's quarterback friendly last week. And he's like, and then there was a follow up, like, can the scheme really, you know, make that big of a difference, or, you know, is it talent? He's like, he kind of thought about it for a second. He's like, well, I mean, talent matters. You can't, I mean, you're not going to throw me and you out there in this great scheme and it's not going to happen. So, I mean, we can.
Yeah,
I
think, I've never seen a great coach win without bad. I mean, you know what I mean? You can compensate, but ultimately, you got to have those horses on the field, and so you know you need guys.
Right, and I'm not saying that Justin Fields isn't a guy. Maybe he's going to be a really good guy. Although I do fall under the, I think you're a little more optimistic than I am. Like I think he may be, but I think he might not be. I'm not sure. The talent is there, the work ethic is there, all that is there. I guess, but I guess my biggest concern is when I look at Ohio State and I see three guys getting drafted, 10, 11, and 12 in this year's draft. I mean, he really had a sweet setup in college where he put up huge numbers. And this is a stupid comment by me. I'm going to out myself. This is a moronic comment. But there is no history, none of any quarterbacks coming out of Ohio State and being successful. So that concerns me just a little bit. And aside from the fact that what we saw last year, and I get it. He was not set up to succeed. But I just, the whole concept that, like, trust me, he's got this. Like, I can't get myself quite there yet. And that's also Bears based in their ability to evaluate. And this is a Ryan Pace quarterback. That's another thing where he got it wrong every time.
Mm-hmm. You didn't like the Craig Krenzel era in Chicago? you weren't a fan of that?
I mean, who's the best quarterback from Ohio State? Art Schleister? It's just not a good list.
No, it's not.
But that shouldn't matter.
I do think it's telling in terms of, you know, the fact that he did have such elite level talent around him. So it was dropped back, and one of my guys is going to beat one of your guys because they're just better. And so I think that we've kind of seen that in Justin's development so far. I think that he's gotten to the space where he understands exactly what's happening to him pre-snap. But I think post-snap is the area where he needs to grow in terms of his next development. What happens to him post-snap? How quickly can he decipher what he's seeing post-snap and then go and make the throw? Because at Ohio State, I don't really have to change my mind post-snap. Pre-snap, Olave's one-on-one. We're good here, okay? We don't have to change that. And so now you get in the NFL, and how do you reconcile what you thought you saw pre-snap versus what actually happened post-snap? And can you do that quick enough to find the end? Do that. That'll be certainly the next step in his development.
Right, and they're trying to make it easier on him or just get him more solid as far as his footwork. We've seen comments about that this offseason. Yeah. And we keep on hearing about the new zone blocking scheme, which the Bears are going to try to be more athletic up front. Their offensive linemen are not going to blow you off the ball, but they can move better than most offensive lines. Plus, there's a ton of competition here. I'm speaking optimistically right now. So maybe the offense will just be – will flow better, will be easier to digest. And I don't want to take any chips off the table that Justin Fields can't, whatever, function and understand the most complex offense out there. There's no evidence that he can't do that either. But I just, you know, listen, last year was rough. So we need to see a little bit more. But one more comment from him. I'm more comfortable this year. This is, again, the Bleacher Report. I kind of know what's coming and what to expect. Me not knowing if I'm going to be the leader of the team or not last year compared to this year means a whole different mindset. Just comfortably and knowing that I'm going to be the guy and that this is my team is definitely a different mindset as I try to be a leader for everybody on the team. So listen, you've been here a year. You know the drill. You know how it goes. You don't get to this position in life without being able to handle pressure. The guy played in the biggest games, championship games at Ohio State. So, he went to Georgia before that. The dude can handle the right. limelight. So, settling in, knowing you're the guy, some guys, that might be like, whoa, I'm not ready for this. He doesn't sound like that at all. It's like, okay, this is my team. I'm going to lead my guys. I'm going to be the first one in. I'm going to be the last one out. Me and Darnell Mooney are going to watch videos till 12:30 in the morning. God bless him. I mean, okay. I am 1,000% like, there's nothing unlikable about Justin Fields. If Baker Mayfield was here, there might be part of me that might be rooting up against that guy for how he conducted himself. I don't have that with Fields. Like, I hope you can do this. I'm willing to appreciate that him settling in could be a big deal, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. You want him to succeed. I think he has, again, all the tools. I think he has the mental makeup to be able to succeed as well, but I think you just got to see it. And even talking about, coming in this year, knowing that he's a leader on the team and, trying to be a leader and maybe changing some of the way that he went about his business last year. And I kind of wish that wasn't the case. I mean, I just be you. So if that's who you are, then be that person last year too. You know what I mean? So I just, regardless of the position that you're put in, again, we've already acknowledged that they didn't put him in the best position to succeed on the field right away. But just, in terms of how you show up to work, how you go about your business, how you motivate and interact with your teammates, that should be the same whether you are starting or the backup or whatever. And so, I think that he has a great opportunity in front of him. The organization is clearly showing a lot of faith in him. No, he doesn't have a lot of weapons around him. He has a pretty good backfield behind him. They can figure out how to get that, outside zone scheme going and try to figure out how to, just play ball control football and manage the game that way and try and make sure that you win time of possession and win the turnover differential. Then they'll have a chance to be in some games late. But I think it's going to be a grind for him. And I think that, he'd probably be better served just getting to work and going out there and balling more so than talking about, why and how he's going to be so much better this year than he was last year.
Yep. And by the way, I hope he does not get graded on wins and losses, but more how he plays. If he plays great and the Bears lose, I'm almost thinking that, to me at least, that's the ideal scenario for this year. Because if the offense gets going and they win somewhere between, call it 4 to 6 games, get a high draft pick, and be able to get him a playmaker with him going into year 3, and he's figured out the offense, plus all the money they have available to spend.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about a team that can maybe do something next year. So if if you go 8-9, 9-8, and now you're drafting 16-17-18, it's not ideal. I'd rather be closer to the bottom. Yeah. As long as he's growing, I don't want him to suck and then to get a hype, because then where are you? Now you're thinking about, do I need to draft a quarterback?
I think they're going to have a lot more resources next year. They're going to have a lot more cap space. They'll have their full allotment of draft picks. So they'll have an opportunity. I think their window will open next year. I don't think it'll open, fully to where they'll legitimately be Super Bowl contenders, but I expect them to try to be in the playoffs next year, maybe even win a game once they get there. And I think that'll kind of open their window. I think their legitimate Super Bowl window will be 24-25, those last 2 years of Justin's rookie deal. If they can continue on that trajectory, then those 2 years legitimate window to win before you have to decide, okay, are we giving him $300 million or are we hitting the reset button again? And so, ideally you'd hope he's a winner and you go ahead and give him the money. But once you give him the money, then it kind of takes away what you can do in a lot of other positions. So I think you want to win in his rookie deal, obviously. But I think that, this year is going to be a bit of a grind. I think there is a formula for success for the Bears. I think it starts on the defense and then it carries on into the running game. And if they can do those things, they can find their way into that kind of purgatory state that you're mentioning, where you're kind of just stuck in the middle. You're not at the bottom, you're not at the top. And it's like, oh, you end up around 8-9, 9-8, that kind of thing. It's not ideal, but I think that it could be a positive sign that they're competing. And I think that if you go out and maybe you spend the money on the right receiver, and then you still find a good play round one. So we'll have to see. But I do think there's a formula for success for the Bears.
So that you just laid out an unbelievable scenario, and you just talked about like a Super Bowl window, which has not been discussed here in quite some time. So that was just fun to even consider. I think you're more optimistic on the defense than me. Who's getting to the quarterback, Herb? And there's rumblings now that how was his name? Am I spacing on who got to the quarterback a ton last year? That's
Robert Quinn.
Yeah,
Robert Quinn.
There we go. It's been a Monday. So yeah, the Robert Quinn doesn't necessarily want to be here, which is a little bit off after his first year being so bad and the Bears going through that, and now you don't want to be here because the Bears are, no one's really saying it, but are in this rebuild. I would trade Robert Quinn. Give me whatever draft picks I can get. Let's go forward. But I mean, who's getting to the quarterback for this defense to be successful?
Yeah, I think that's a key, right? And I think that if you hold on to Robert Quinn, then you're hoping that he can give you some semblance of the season he gave you last year. Certainly, you don't expect him to extend the Bears' single season sack record or anything like that. But if you can get a similar type of presence from him this year, where he's consistently applying pressure in the backfield, I think he can help you. I think that Travis Gibson is primed to take another step forward as well. I think he'll get more opportunities, and with that, I think that he should ascend. And just take another step forward. That being said, I think that when you talk about, having this cover two defense, those two interior guys are really, really important. I don't know that they're going to get the push that they need, from the middle. And I think that that's going to be, just as important as anything. I know they signed Justin Jones and maybe, he can be that guy for you, but you need a really, really, need a difference maker at that three tech for that cover two to work. And I don't know that they have that. Kyrus Tungum, he's a strong kid. He may be able to hold up for you at the point of attack in the running game. But in terms of applying pressure, I don't know. You're going to have to hope that it comes from Robert Quinn, Travis Gibson. Maybe they'll dial up some pressures with Roquan Smith and Morrow. And then on the back end, you got to hope that those two kids are ready to play, right? And so you certainly need Kyler Gordon to take over that number two corner spot. But then whoever is the strong safety, whether it's Jaquan Brisco or even Elijah Hicks, I like that kid too. Whoever's at that spot, is going to have to play well. And I think that if they can get that together, and I don't know that I'm very optimistic about the defense, I'm just saying that that's the shortest road to success for them, right? If you can get the defense together, that's quicker than hoping that offensive line is going to come together and that group of wide receivers is going to make some plays. And so I think that I don't know that I'm very optimistic that the defense can do it, but I'm just saying that is their shortest road to success.
Fair enough. And the Larry Okunjobi saga was a huge loss. I mean, the dude, he was coming off an injury, so I don't know how they thought he was going to actually step in. But a player like that would have been huge for this defense in year one of the Flus train. Let's talk a little bit more about the defense. We'll get off fields here. Herb, what does Roquan have to prove anything more to this regime that he is worthy of a 5-year, call it roughly $100 million contract?
In my mind, he doesn't. I think he possesses everything that you're looking for in terms of a player. He's consistently on the field. He shows up. He's always around the ball. I think his skill set lends very well to the scheme that they want to run, whether they put him at Mike or they put him at Will. I think his speed, his ability to get sideline to sideline, his instincts, his burst to kind of make plays in the backfield and get some TFLs, I think he's shown you everything that you would want to see from a linebacker. He also seems to be a pretty good leader. He always shows up. He never really kind of hides and ducks any accountability for what's going on. So I think that he's shown himself to be a really, really good leader and a foundational piece that you could build upon. And so I think that they should probably go ahead and get him locked up if that's in their plans. If it's not, I'd be surprised.
Roquan representing himself. Go Roquan. I would not want to do that, sit in that room, but good for him. And listen, I'm with you. Have you watched the Bears play defense? Have you seen that guy flying around the field? Have you seen how violent he plays? I mean, have you seen the rest of his defense? I don't think you want to necessarily sign guys because you don't have anything else. But the Bears need Roquan. He's entering his prime. I mean, to me, this is a no-brainer. It sounds like it's going to get done, too. The rumblings definitely are pointing that way. So, hey, Roquan, you've earned this. Let's go. Nick Foles out the door, our number nine.
What are we going to do now?
Yeah. Well, hold on a second, Herb. The best game was started by any Bears quarterback last year was Nick Dan Foles, unfortunately for the Bears. The win over Seattle was, yeah. I mean, objectively, it's the best game they had. I didn't, for the record, like, I don't know if they looked at Nick as kind of that, at least part of the chemistry issues that Justin was talking about. I mean, to me, Nick was like an honest guy in that room that was like a normal person, and the right and Nagy and company were the problem, but they just had to have Trevor Siemian and ended up, you know, releasing Nick because nobody would trade from Good Job Indianapolis waiting this one out. You get him for free on a 2-year deal.
Yeah, I think that Nick Foles, you know, is a guy who's got a lot of experience. He's seen it all, and I think that certainly in a spot, in a pinch, he can come in and get you a spot start here or there and be successful for you. But I think that, you know, the Bears probably thought that it was just better to move on from him, and hopefully they were trying to get a seventh round pick or something like that. That never materialized. Like you said, shout out to the coach for not doing that, because that's the guy you wanted. You knew eventually they were going to have to get rid of him, so we'll just, you know, sign him. He's familiar with the system over there, so he would probably want to go anyway. So that makes sense for the coach, and it makes sense for Nick Foles. But, you know, I think the Bears, moving on from that, I understand it. I don't feel very good about their backup quarterback position. Now, hopefully they don't need a backup quarterback, right? But we've all seen how many shots Justin Fields takes. He likes to get out in the pocket. He likes to do all those crazy spin moves and get shots in his back and shots in his rib. And so, you know, I'd imagine at some point he's going to be on the sideline, whether that's for a drive or a quarter or a game. And I don't know that Trevor Siemian is the guy you want on the field.
I mean, right, let's have a deep argument about the backup quarterback, most popular guy on the roster. Better quarterback, Foles or Siemian? I mean, to me, it's Foles.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
I agree, but I just think that, you know, it depends on like, kind of like where you are, right? And so if they don't feel like that they find the most value in having a veteran backup, I think you need a veteran backup when you are a team like the Colts who have legitimate Super Bowl aspirations and say, okay, if our star goes down, can somebody carry us through a game or two, or win us a playoff game in a pinch, or whatever it may be? And I don't know if that's the Bears situation per se. And so they probably, you know, felt the best to just go younger and let Justin do his thing.
So that's an interesting angle, by the way. Listen, if this guy goes down, the last thing we want is some veteran coming in here and winning us games and moving us up in the draft. We don't need that. You, on the other hand, we know you're going to be a good soldier. You're going to be get along, Trevor Siemian. You're not going to think you belong on the field ever. And I hate that. Listen, I do a lot of WGN radio with Northwestern. Trevor, I appreciate you. Even though I had no idea you were this good at Northwestern, because at the time, if we're going deep into Northwestern, like, the dude was he was splitting time.
He was
with Kane Coulter, and every time Kane Coulter went off the field, I'm like, put Kane back in there. What are you doing, Pat Fitzgerald? But it turns out they have had a 10-year NFL quarterback. It looks like he's going to be on the roster. All right. Let me, my normal Monday partner, my normal DeWindy partner, Patrick Schmidt, he got a little drunk and predicted the Bears to win 11 games when we did the schedule show. But my other former radio guy, on the big national scene here, First Things First, who knows nothing about basketball and is just getting crushed today for his prediction that the Mavs were going to beat the Warriors, Nick Wright, he also has the Bears winning 11 damn games. So, Herb, how many games are the Bears going to win this year? I mean, there's some optimism out there from at least a couple of pockets.
I'll have what they're having. I think when I looked at the schedule, I saw on the low end 6 wins. On the high end, there is a way that they can win 11 games, but that was the most optimistic view that I could possibly give it after I went over the schedule a couple of times. So realistically, I think they'll probably fall somewhere in the middle of that. So I'm thinking 8-9, 9-8. I'll go 8-9 and say that's probably where they're going to come in. And I know you were saying that's probably the worst case scenario, and I don't disagree with you on that. That the Bears' formula for success, again, it's about whether or not they can be honest with themselves about who they are, right? If they come in, they like, hey, we do have number one receivers on the outside, and we do have a great offensive line, and we can 7-step drop and throw this thing around. If they come in here acting like that, then they'll probably win 3 or 4 games. But if they come in understanding exactly who they are and say, hey, we're going to have to lean on our defense, play good special teams, protect the ball, run the ball, dominate the time of possession, those types of things. Just kind of win games 17-13, 21-17, 10-3, whatever it may be. It doesn't have to be sexy. There's more than one way to skin a cat. You can win football games a lot of different ways. If they figure out their formula and execute it, I can see them coming in at 9-8, but I'll go 8-9 right now.
So, and I think that's exactly what's going to happen, because I do think we're going to have an over-Flus first year. I'm buying in. They are going to go about their business the right way. They are going to play extremely hard. I think the character that they have brought into this club is obvious. Like, I think the way they're identifying different guys, Lucas, Patrick, whoever you want to name, that really are going to squeeze every bit of juice out of their talent. So I could see the Bears overachieving a little bit here in year one and doing that 8-9, 9-8 thing. Football season is a crazy thing. We'll see about guys getting hurt and all that stuff and Fields progressing.
Their schedule is favorable too. I mean, they go to New York twice. They get the Jets. They get the Giants. They get the Lions twice. They get the Texans. You know, you got some winnable games on your schedule. So if you can get two from the Lions, and maybe you get two from the teams in New York, you get the Texans, and maybe you can bank five to start with and see if you can go about splitting with the Vikings, or maybe you can get one from Dallas or something like, you know, just Miami. Try to go about Miami, and you can, and then now you're creeping up around that 8-win thing. So I think that's kind of where they'll come in at. They'll lose twice to the Packers. You know, they'll probably lose to the Patriots. Like, but, you know, they'll lose at least one to the Vikings, but they could certainly end up in that 500 range.
If there's one game that they win this year, damn it, I hope it's the Patriots game. I want to kick their ass.
That'd be nice.
That'd be a good win. What's up, Phylon? Appreciate you jumping in around the chat. Loving the Herb appearance. Hey, all right, I just want to get away from the Bears for just one second, even though this is a Bears podcast, because huge news over the weekend with the White Sox and the Yankees and Josh Donaldson saying, "What's going on, Jackie?" to Tim Anderson. Listen, I've put out my thoughts on Twitter, and I just find I find the whole thing to be extremely offensive. But, you know, Herb, as a black man, you can speak to this a lot better than I can. And I don't know if you can put yourself exactly in Tim's shoes, but if you're on that field and somebody says that to you, how do you think you would have taken it?
Well, I would have been offended, right? And I've heard things come out, there's this history with Tim Anderson and having this nickname, and him and Donaldson have done this thing back and forth or whatnot. And I don't know what's true or not true on that, right? But I do know that Tim came out and said that he was offended by it. I know Donaldson said he didn't mean it to be offensive or anything like that. I just think that for black people, right? And I was watching ESPN this morning. I was watching Stephen A. Smith and Marcus Spears talk about it. And both of them were completely forgiving, and they excused Donaldson and say, "Hey, I don't think there was any malice here. I don't think he's racist or anything like that. And maybe he's not. I don't know the guy, right? But I think that black people far too often, in my estimation, give everybody else, at least you talk about these talking heads, give everybody else passes when we don't get that same luxury. We don't get that same benefit of the doubt. And pick another community, pick another subset of our society. You talk about the LGBTQ community or Jewish community. It doesn't matter how you meant it. Say something out of your mouth about the LGBTQ community and see if they don't come down on your head. They will. And because of that, they have been able to advance their objective. And I think that black people just kind of need to be on code. And so when I hear somebody like Stephen A. Smith, who's, you know, maybe the most notable black voice in right now, is like, hey, the fact that this is a possibility, I'm not saying he did or he didn't, but play on code, if you will, like other groups have been able to do to advance their agenda.
I hear you, and it's like an odd spot for me, because I don't want to be the guy on Twitter who's like, because, you know, people are yelling at me, "You're just trying to get followers." It's like, hey, dude, I'm not sure. I'd like more followers. So would everybody else out there. But I also want my thoughts on what's right in society out there too. And so if I pick up 20 followers, it's more important that I, you know, feel like I'm doing my smallest of parts to advance what I think matters. And listen, you're not friends with Tim Anderson. You're not on his team. You all never played together. You don't get to, you don't get to say, like, well, he called himself Jackie, so I can. That is the most messed up logic I've ever heard.
It
doesn't work like that, dude. And another thing, after the fact that Tim comes out and he says that I'm pissed, I'm really sorry. I did not mean that. I get that I was wrong. I accept my one game measly suspension for Major League Baseball. Can we get to three? How about five? You know, I accept it. I'm appealing. Dude, I mean, that's just it's just BS.
Yeah, I think once he says he's offended by it, however you meant it, doesn't matter, right? You say, okay, I didn't mean to offend you. I apologize. I can see where I made the mistake. I'm sorry, sincerely. But I think that when you go into explaining it away, it's like, why are you going that hard to explain it away? You can't even see how this could be offensive to him. And to your point about, you know, if he does that with his friends or with his teammates or whomever, fine, right? I grew up in a house with five brothers. We said all kind of stuff to each other, right? But you can't come from outside talking about them like that. That's going to be a problem. You know what I mean? So it's not the same thing. And so I think that, you know, he has to understand that. But I think, again, that's the point I'm making in terms of, you know, how Black people respond to these things, right? We don't always have to be so forgiving and so like, oh, please. I think we want to be accepted so bad that we just like, yo, okay, I know you didn't mean to hurt our feelings. Don't be so hard on him. No, he wouldn't be the same with you if you offended him. So you can take your stand and say, no, you actually did offend me. It's not cool. Don't do that again. It don't mean I hate you. We don't have to fight about it or nothing. What you did wasn't cool. I didn't like it. Don't do it again. And then we're all right.
Right. That's the most mature way I've ever heard anybody put it in the last 24 hours. So I appreciate you speaking on. I didn't want to put you in a corner like, hey, you're the black guy on here to talk about this. But like, it's just been a huge conversation.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. And Rob Manfred, you failed on this one. You just did one game, and Yankees fans, and then we can stop. What are you booing? Like, what? Come on, man. Like, I get it. Baseball, it's like we got some old school stuff going on here. But you're booing Tim Anderson.
Yeah,
that is messed up. Like, that feels like we're straight in the 40s and Jackie's actually on the field almost. I mean, we're closer to that than we are to what's right. I'll say that.
Yeah, sometimes we get into these spaces and people's real emotions and feelings bleed all over themselves. And they try to hide it or disguise. Hey, I'm not like this. I'm like that. And so something comes up and puts you in a position to where you have to show your hand. And then you boo this guy because he was offended by that. Like, that's...
Right,
you're bleeding all over yourself right now. Your privilege is leaking everywhere, and nobody needs to see it.
That's a great way of putting it. Your privilege is leaking everywhere. And by the way, just to the Yankees fans, I keep on saying I'm done with this, and I have more thoughts popping in my head. Aaron Boone nailed it. Brought him, said, "Hey, listen, I did not like it. I don't like it. I get after talking to Josh." Where he lost a little bit here, but he gets after talking about Josh where he was coming from at least a little bit. But, you know, I don't think he should have gone there. It is wrong. Now, Aaron, by the way, you need to play him yesterday. He could have, you know, forget about MLB and his suspension. You could be like, listen, you're not going to play. You're not going to play today. And let me tell you how I want you to handle this. I want you to apologize to the media and to the team. So it'd be interesting to me how that clubhouse handles it. Because you're telling me that Aaron Judge and company, you know, who that they all love that comment. There's no way they did. Any rate, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you gonna be out there tomorrow? A little OTA.
Yeah, I'll definitely be out there tomorrow. Looking forward to seeing. You know, it just looking for small incremental signs of progress. And so they went from rookie mini camp, and that was just pretty much just. I don't know, rolling the ball out there and saying kids have fun or whatever and trying to get them lined up in a line and remember everybody's name. And then you got out there again last week and you kind of saw a little bit something more that slightly rethink that you should kind of look to see just a little bit more progression. Are they implementing more things in the offense? Are they understanding more things on the defense? Do you see them flying around? Are they doing different things? You know, because I think obviously we're still in T-shirts and shorts and things like that. It's hard to really tell. But some of the things you can tell, okay, this thing is kind of coming together. They're starting to put more on their plate. They're starting to understand things. It's not taking so long to get from one drill to the next. Because at first, that's the That's really the whole purpose of those first. Can we get from one drill to the next? Can we get in and out of the huddle? And now those things shouldn't be a problem. Now you're starting to look and see what the execution looks like as they run their offense or call different things on their defense.
One of the coolest things, at least from a media standpoint, is that we get to talk to the assistant coaches in kind of a powwow thing, which doesn't happen anymore. Nobody cares about this, but I'll just tell you, it used to be that we could get you our own ideas of information. You could sit down with a player one-on-one and get something that nobody else has. Now we have these little pods where we can talk to the defensive coaches. So I think you can gain some information tomorrow. I don't know if you're excited to talk to anyone in particular or about anyone in particular. I actually need to memorize these guys' names, to be honest, as to who. But like you mentioned, one guy, Elijah Hicks. I'd like to get some thoughts on where he's at. I'd like to mm-hmm. hear what they're mm-hmm. saying about Brisker, Kyler Gordon. So mm-hmm. I think there'll mm-hmm. be some interesting stuff coming out on the defense tomorrow.
Yes, yeah, it's always nice to be able to talk to the position coaches directly. I think you talk to the head coach often enough. You talk to the coordinators, a little bit less often. But getting the opportunity to talk to the position coaches who work the most hands-on with these guys gives you a little bit different insight into the specifics in terms of, their, physical ability or their mental makeup. And I think that you can learn a lot by talking to those coaches. I was talking to the offensive line coach last week because we talked to offensive assistants last week. And I just asked them, is Sam Mustipher too small to succeed at right guard in this league? Like, it's just, you look at him and he was an undersized center, but to see him at right guard, he looks really undersized. And, coach told me that he doesn't think he's undersized, and he compared him to a guy like Andy Levitre who he had coached in the past. But just looking at him, I don't know that that's a guy that you can run out there week one at right guard. It's nothing against him. I like Sam Mustipher. He's a smart guy. He understands the game. But he's just a little light in the pants at right guard. And I know they want to move their linemen. They want smaller, more athletic linemen. And we'll see if that works out. But I think that those are the type of things you can come to understand from talking to the assistants. Tomorrow, I would like to talk about Dominique Robinson, who's the kid they took in the fifth round to play the end. He was a quarterback in high school. He was a receiver the first 2 years in college. And now he's a, fifth round pick at defensive end. And I think that that is a huge transition in a short amount of time. And honestly, when he came in and talked to us, in the press conference, you looked at him and it's like, if he had said, "Hey, I'm a wide receiver," you'd be like, "Yeah, okay, I can believe that." He doesn't necessarily look like a DN. And so, here's a guy I'm just curious to see, are you going to try and put him out there and let him be a one trick pony and say, "Hey, just speed rush, try to use your bend and bend the corner. We'll work on everything else as time goes along. We'll work on trying to set an edge in the running game. We'll work on trying to get bigger, stronger, those types of things. But for now, just speed rush, bend the corner." So I'm interested in finding out, what the coaches have seen from him so far.
It's a great angle because, it's high ceiling guy, which I liked it. Take a big swing. This dude might be an impact defensive player or not. But okay, you're going for best available talent on the board at the time. So I appreciated that philosophy from Ryan Poles. Herban, it's second time we've had you. Awesome yeah, conversation today. Really enjoyed it. And let's do it again for sure. I'll see you out there at the old Hallis Hall tomorrow.
Carmen, it's a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me. Anytime. I'll see you tomorrow.
It feels good. That's why I played mostly in college. So it is comfortable. It's nice. And I do look forward to keep on getting these reps at right tackle. I play wherever they need me. Get in where you fit in.
This program was recorded on tape for a live audience.
I don't really know how to answer that. It's coming. So basically, you're saying, how do I weigh? Can you ask it again?
What were your initial thoughts on the schedule when you started these home games, road games, when the bye is, those types of things?
Doesn't matter. Does not matter. I could care less.
It doesn't matter to your eyes. It's in December. That's the latest.
Nope.
Do you like doing Pilates or is that like torture?
You ever do a Pilates workout? It is. Yeah, it is. Oh, my God. Oh. So I'm trying to get more cleansed out.